This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, up and down Route 55, covering much of central Illinois. Our number here at the station, if you'd like to contact us, is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. Better yet, you can contact us at our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. It will tell you a lot about us. And, of course, we are brought to you by you. And if you would like to make a donation, go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com, and it will tell you how to do that. And we can use whatever anyone is able to give. It would help us out much, especially during the summer. And it is sort of our off season. Our expenses continue, but a lot of the donations and so forth go down. People are very busy. So anything that anybody can donate, we certainly would appreciate. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, today. We're going to have a great show for you. Remember, the Men's March out in Washington, D.C. is going on today. And men in that march are taking a stand against abortion and for women. And it's for fathers to be marching in especially. So remember the people out there and pray for them, especially if they're having some of the kind of weather that we're having here. There must be a lot of heat. And before we start, of course, I'll turn over the program to my wife, Lynn. And we'll see what she has to say. And then we're going to talk about a topic. It's called the Godless Constitution. And that may be surprising and a little shocking to people, but stay with us. And you're going to hear about it, and there'll be some interesting things to talk about. So I'll turn it over to Lynn at this point. Lynn?
Yes, June is the month of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. This is what we remember during the month of June. And the solemnity of the Sacred Heart was yesterday, the 11th. If you're not familiar with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, Jesus appeared to St. Margaret in about 1656, somewhere in there. And he promised that if you would venerate his Holy Sacred Heart, and if you kept a picture of the Sacred Heart in your home, you would have, he had 12 promises, here they are. I will give them all the grace necessary in their state of life. I will establish peace in their homes. I will comfort them in all of their afflictions. I will be a secure refuge during life, especially at their death. I will give abundant blessings upon all of their undertakings. Sinners will find my heart to be a source and infinite ocean of mercy. This reminds us of divine mercy. Same message, infinite source and ocean of mercy. Lukewarm souls shall be comforted. Fervent souls shall be quickly elevated to high perfection. Number 9, I will bless every place in which an image of my heart is exposed and honored. I will give to priests the gift of touching the most hardened hearts. Those who promote this devotion will have their names written in my heart. Number 12, I promise you, in the excessive mercy of my heart, that all those who will receive Holy Communion on the first nine consecutive first Fridays of the month, the grace of final grace of peace, and that you will get the sacraments that prepare you for the final journey to heaven. You shall not die in disgrace. Now, many of us who grew up in the Catholic Church years ago did the first nine first Fridays during the school year if you went to Catholic school. And we all strove to get those nine first Fridays in. So if you can, do it. You'll be blessed in many, many ways. That's about all I want to talk about with Sacred Heart this month, Bob.
Okay, well, it's a very relevant thing to talk about, especially people need that, I'm sure. if they think, as a lot of people seem to think today, and I'm beginning to believe myself, we look around sometimes at our society and we think that we're living in some kind of a madhouse. I mean, really, it seems as if sometimes good is called evil and evil is called good in our modern society. It seems like sometimes crime is rewarded and honesty is punished. The greed seems a lot of times to be the order of the day. But at any rate, especially if you're the age my wife and I are at, and you look back over the 50 or 60 years of living that have gone on during that period of time and see the changes that has happened to our society, mostly, in our opinion, for the worse, everyone, it seems, in the country and in the world today, in the modern Western world, seems to feel that there's something wrong. And something is going the wrong way and something is going bad. And the question is, why did this happen? And so many disasters in modernism have happened. And the question, again, is why? In 1983, Alexander Solzhenitsyn gave a speech for one of the awards he got for his writings on the Gulag Archipelago. And, of course, the Gulag Archipelago it was the system of prison camps throughout Soviet Russia in the early days of communism. And, of course, Alexander Solzhenitsyn was a prison in that gulag for 10 years and survived it. And he became a very prominent writer and spent a lot of time writing about the Russian Revolution and why it happened and what went wrong with it. And in that speech, he said, "I have spent 50 years working on the history of our revolution," meaning the Bolshevik communist revolution that happened in Russia back at the early part of the 20th century. And he said, "The revolution that swallowed up 60 million, can you imagine that? 60 million of our people." And summing it all up, he said, "If I had to give a short answer, a simple answer," he said, "I could not put it more accurately after 50 years of study than to say that men have forgotten God. That's why all this happened." But the question we have to ask ourselves is why? Why in the modern world, why did Russia, for example, forget God? And why does modern man forget God? And if what happened in Russia is any indication of what it seems to be also happening in similar ways in our modern world today, why, again, does modern man forget God? And the answer to that is a lot, maybe not entirely, but a lot, because it is in the very nature of the constitutions of modern states, and especially it was in the nature, perhaps more strongly, in the underpinnings of the Russian Soviet state than in ours, of course, but nevertheless, there is a theme that runs through the constitutions of modern states, including our own, and that is that the constitutions are secular and they're free of God. And the question it might be is, was there any concern about that when our Constitution back at our time was first formed and constitutions of other modern states are formed? And the answer to that is yes. There were warnings about what would happen to our nation if God was left out of our Constitution as well. And what is happening now shows that those warnings were accurate. So what I want to do in this program today is let's take a look at what was said at that time. And I'm taking my information from a book that I have used before. It's called The Liberty, The God That Failed by Christopher A. Ferrara. And he's talking about the beginnings here of our modern Western civilization of the United States and talking about the fact that our Constitution, it may sound harsh, but was a godless Constitution, as are most modern constitutions in this day and age. And he takes a hard look at it, through the eyes of an organization called the National Reform Association. And this group of people was first formed way back at the very beginning, almost, of our country. And people all the way from the very beginning, from the very early 1800s up until the very, very early part of the 20th century, warned that by not including God in our Constitution or in modern constitutions, we were inviting a great danger to modern civilization and also to our country. And so I want to read some of those warnings and some of the reasons that these people gave as to what they saw, you know, as the defect in our Constitution and the dangers, the specific dangers they predicted might happen because of the exclusion of God from modern constitutions. So that's what we're going to do. And so we're reading from Liberty, the God That Failed, and we're talking about the National Reform Association's warnings. And people, of course, independently from the National Reform Association also gave warnings of their concern about what might happen if God was not included in a constitution of a modern country. It says what, here, go ahead, I'm sorry.
What Fatima could talk, what it's going to talk about would be what Fatima was talking about, message there. Without God, you're stuck.
Exactly. Without God, nations don't have. The whole point is that without God in a constitution, especially in our own constitution, all we have, the highest principle that we can refer to, is we the people. But is we the people enough? Without a transcendent principle, something higher than the Constitution and the country and the secular materialism itself, without something higher to guide us and to turn to, as we the people, enough of a principle to keep us from going down the wrong path, especially when we as Catholics, and I'm going to go ahead and read this from a Catholic point of view, not just from a Christian point of view, but from a Catholic Christian point of view, when we know as Catholics that we suffer from concupiscence, that people suffer from original sin, and there is a tendency to go downhill. I mean, there is a tendency in all of us to do wrong. There is an tendency to be sinful. And when you have a natural part of human nature that is sinful, then without something to guide us more than just the materialism of this world, that tendency is actually made probably far stronger, and there is nothing to keep it from going down that sinful path. And so this is why it is important, according to a lot of the people that talked about a godless constitution, it is important to have a transcendent principle in there. And that principle, of course, comes from God, who transcends the natural world that we live in. So this is what we're going to talk about. But it says here, the NRA, whose third president was Justice Strong, one of the Supreme Court justices, had come into being based on the shared conviction of the delegation to its natural convention that the Republic had offended God in formulating its organic law without the least reference to him or his authority. And it goes on, it says, the Constitution's godlessness had preoccupied the most conservative Protestants from the very dawn of the Republic. I mean, you have to consider, this was a Protestant nation for the most part. Our founders were Protestants, and it was founded on Protestant principles. But those very Protestants themselves, back at that time, were very, very concerned because God was left out of the Constitution. And, of course, this goes back again to who I just was talking about, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who concluded after 50 years of study the horrible results of the Russian Revolution and why did it happen. And his conclusion was simply this, that God was forgotten, and that's why it happened. 60 million people killed and destroyed by a godless communism. In 1788, back as far as 1788, Luther Martin, the delegate from Maryland to the Constitutional Convention, wrote with bitter sarcasm of the Constitution's failure to prescribe even bare belief in God as a qualification for national office. There were some members so unfashionable as to think that a belief in the existence of a deity would be some security for the good conduct of our rulers. I mean, this man was seeing in 1788 that without higher principles than simply secular materialism to guide them, that our rulers would eventually go astray. And I think we can look at that and see, of course, that that is happening today. In 1793, only 4 years after the Constitution was ratified, John M. Mason, one of the great pulpit orators of the Revolution, gave a sermon entitled Divine Judgments, in which he lamented that the very Constitution, which the singular goodness of God enabled us to establish, does not even recognize his being, a shameful truth that should crimson our faces. In 1811, continuing in this admonitory vein, Samuel Austin, president of the University of Vermont, warned his congregation in a published sermon that the Constitution has one capital defect which will issue inevitably in its destruction. And aren't we seeing that today? It is entirely disconnected from Christianity. So we're going to stop here and take a break, but we can see that very early in our country, these warnings were being laid down that without a reference to God and our Constitution, we were putting ourselves on a very, very dangerous path. So we'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about that dangerous path. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Matching Mondays are here again. Donations made to Catholic Spirit Radio on Mondays in June will be matched dollar for dollar. The advisory board of this station, who are listeners just like you, agreed to match up to a total of $2,000. Yes, send in a donation now and it will be doubled. For instance, if you donate $25, our board will make it worth $50. Take advantage of our Matching Monday offer. Here's how you can make your gift go twice as far on any Matching Monday in June. Online, go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com and donate by credit or debit card. Or send a check to 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Donations are tax deductible. By supporting this station, you help share the good news with 250,000 potential listeners. We think you'll agree that that is important. With your donation, plus our match, together we can double the financial support on Matching Mondays in June.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about our topic today, the godless Constitution, and we are talking about the Constitution of the United States. We were mentioning the fact that modern constitutions are secular, that they omit God. Our Constitution is no different than that. Our founders left God out of the Constitution, hoping that by being neutral on religion, thinking that they could be neutral on religion, that somehow or another they would protect the country from being a theocracy and other detractions that a religious constitution might bring. But the fact is that a constitution without reference to God may be, and it seems to be, and certainly was in Russia with the advent of Russian communism and the Gulag Archipelago, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn pointed out, the 60 million people died because God was forgotten. So there may be far more danger in leaving a higher power and a higher principle out of constitutions to guide nations, could be far more dangerous than putting it in. In 1811, for example, continuing in this vein, 1812, the Honorable Samuel Taggart, a former U.S. congressman and Presbyterian minister, sounded the warning that America had broken with all historical precedent in forming a nation without any acknowledgement of God. And it went on to say that our Constitution takes no notice of and is not at all connected with religion. In this instance, the United States are exhibiting a new and singular spectacle to the world, a phenomenon which the world has never witnessed before. We have to remember how different this was back at that time. It is a bold experiment and one which I fear can only issue in national apostasy and national ruin. And then it goes on here, the president of Yale, Timothy Dwight, in around the same time, 1812 to 1813, likewise linked the prospect of America's ruin to the framers' neglect of God, decrying the sinful character of our nation. Dwight's famous discourse in the chapel of Yale College indicted the Constitution as the locus of that sin. He said, "We formed our Constitution without any acknowledgement of God, without any recognition of His mercies to us as a people, of His government, or even His existence. The convention by which it was formed never asked even once His direction or His blessing upon their labors. Thus we commenced our national existence under the present system without God." And again, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a person, a very literary person who wrote the Gulag Archipelago, and who studied for 50 years the causes of the horrors that happened with the Russian Revolution, concluded that the simplest answer and the main answer is that Russia had forgotten God. So it goes on here. It says, "When even the grossest nations and individuals in their public acts always recognize the superintendency of a supreme being. Even Napoleon does it. We, however, have neglected to do it. The result," Dwight continued, "was the corruption which is now rapidly extending in this country and gives reasonable apprehension that we are soon to suffer the punishment to which we have exposed ourselves." And this is talking way back in the early part of the 19th century and the corruption. And if we look at what's going on today, things have gotten a lot worse. And he goes, "No association of men for moral purposes can be justified in an entire neglect of the sovereign of the world." Again, in 1833, Justice Story, a former Supreme Court justice, in his famous commentaries, he says, "It yet remains to be solved in human affairs whether any free government can be permanent where the public worship of God and the support of religion constitutes no part of public policy or the duty of the state in any assignable shape. The future experience of Christendom, and chiefly of the American states, must settle this problem, as yet new in the history of the world." Well, it's no longer new today. It's been around for a while. But the fact is that a lot of modern states have gone down the path to totalitarianism. And we are not accepted from that possibility. We're not some kind of an exception that it can't happen here. It can happen here. And one of the reasons that these people warned about a couple hundred years ago is the fact that we left God out of the Constitution. It goes on here. In 1845, the theologian D.X. Junkin objected that the Constitution appeared to have been drafted according to the prejudices of the infidel few rather than the consciences of the Christian millions. And we were a nation of Christian and still are. There are a lot of people who are Christians and don't necessarily go along with the direction the minority is taking us. And we asked the question, how can that happen? Well, Alexander Solzhenitsyn pointed out that it only took about 10,000 Bolsheviks in Russia to turn the whole country down the wrong path that led to a huge disaster. So how is that possible for such a tiny minority to start out and take a whole country down the wrong path? And the answer is that the fact is because God was left out of the Soviet Constitution, and in fact, the Soviet Constitution was sort of anti-God, and God has also been left out of our Constitution, and that allows a small minority to manipulate the Constitution in such a way as to block a lot of Christian principles and a lot of Christian projects. And so the few can actually impose their prejudices and their direction of progress on the majority, and that's happening in our country today, simply because we don't have a constitution containing the acceptance of God. It's assumed that God must be ruled out of the public square, and that gives a lot of power to minorities that can manipulate along lines that they never could if our constitution contained Christian principles. And it goes on again. It says, here we see the recognition that the builders of the republic are not representative of the religion of the overwhelming majority of the American people, who woke one day to find themselves the subjects unto death of that republic built on a constitution without God. And the Civil War proved that, even and not necessarily that the South was right or anything like that. But the point is that if you try to invoke a leaving or a departure from the rulings of the Constitution of the United States, you bring down a lot of power upon yourselves, as the South found out, for different reasons, of course. But nevertheless, the point is that we live under the authority of a constitution, and that constitution without God gives a lot of power to a minority of people in the country who will take it in a different direction than the Christian one. In 1863, Professor Pomeroy of New York University voiced the essence of the Catholic teaching in rejecting the theory of our national constitution, that the state as an organic body has nothing whatever to do with religion, except to protect the individuals in whatever belief or worship they may adopt. And that means in whatever belief or worship they may adopt. That religion is entirely a matter between each man and his God. Noting that, on the contrary, there is a growing opinion among thoughtful men all over the country that this thing should be abandoned, and that a state should acknowledge the claims of God and own him to be the supreme rule of the nation, as well of the individuals who make up that nation. It goes on. It says here, we have set up ourselves, our concrete nationality, we the people, as the original source of all authority and power, and have worshipped the work of our own hands. And if you read Solzhenitsyn, you also get that in what he has to say, that the Soviet state began to worship man as the highest ideal in the universe and on the face of the earth, and that man can accomplish anything and can actually institute a utopia here on earth by a secular material process. And of course, you can see what it turned into without the guidance of principles that are transcendent to this world.
Isn't that what's going on now?
Yes, it is.
You can see that in our own culture and in our science and so forth, in our medicine. We're recreating everything.
Exactly. And there was another, article about this. It says, in this particular article, the article concluded with a ringing indictment of sheer legal positivism that was even then becoming dominant under a federal charter that made no reference to any authority higher than we the people. And legal positivism is simply the idea that the highest guidance for a state is simply the law. That is, the law that is posited or put forth by courts and by, interpretations of the Constitution and other earthly and secular powers, that the secular positivism that all law, in fact, even morality, comes from simply the declaration of people based on a constitution or other legal precedents, and that there is nothing higher than that. There is no authority to go to anything higher than we, the people, who posit or put out that law. That's what legal positivism means. And it goes on here. It says, nay, in the very Senate chamber, when senators are warned that a measure is unjust and against the law of God, it is sneeringly, scornfully answered that there is no higher law than the Constitution. We, the people, made that. And we, the people, can make and unmake laws as we please. It goes on to say, this godless habit of thought and action has taken possession of the public mind in all political institutions and affairs. And isn't that a pretty accurate description, Lynn, of exactly the way people feel today?
Exactly.
And this was said over 100 years ago.
Right. We were warned again in Fatima. The very same thing.
Exactly.
And one of the Psalms I'd like to put in, Psalm 2, why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds asunder and cast their cords from us. Isn't that what was done?
Exactly. And again, there's this constant emphasis that it is dangerous to have religion or God in a constitution, that it could create a theocratic state. But the fact is that is overemphasizing something. You can put into a constitution that a theocracy can be outlawed, but nevertheless, that the principles of Christianity were the principles this nation was implicitly, if not explicitly, implicitly founded upon. If it wasn't founded upon these principles de jure, it was founded upon these principles de facto, and there certainly isn't anything as dangerous in acknowledging that as there is dangerous in trying to pretend that you can have a constitution that is built on nothing higher than the will of we the people or we the state or the laws that people happen to make based on secular materialism. And we can see that how it worked out in a lot of modern nations, especially Germany and the Soviet Union. You can see what happened there when there weren't higher principles that would be a check to the state that would say this far and no further. And Solzhenitsyn pointed that out. And he was a very, very intelligent, a very learned man. And he himself said, I couldn't give you a better answer than to say we have forgotten God. And again, when the Revolutionary War was over and the victory over our enemies were won and the blessings and happiness of liberty and peace were secured, the Constitution was framed and God was neglected. He was not merely forgotten, as Solzhenitsyn, claims. It says here, he was absolutely ruled out and voted out of our Constitution. And that is true. And that is why minorities that go against very sound religious principles can gain so much power, because they can rule those principles out of the public square and keep people from being able to voice or assert them. And this is a very, very dangerous situation, because it means that there is no check on the state along a secular direction. There seems to be no check on the state, but there is along any kind of Christian or religious direction. So it's a most unnatural and impossible monster. It says here, if there is any truth that may be said to be practically as well as theoretically, then it is certain that what we call politics must be religious or anti-religious. These were conclusions that were made in 1872 by an NRA convention, when Professor Taylor Lewis, an eminent Greek scholar, was speaking. And that's what he said. If there is any truth that may be said, I'll say it again, to be practically as well as theoretically, then it is certain that what we call politics must be religious or anti-religious, Christian or anti-Christian. The state cannot be neutral. It must be religious or irreligious. So it was held by the most eminent legislators before the birth of Christ, an irreligious community, one that did not acknowledge God or something divine as the ground of civil obligations, was a most unnatural as well as an impossible monster. Lewis went on to say, every modern state must be Christian or anti-Christian. Neutrality is impossible. Neutrality is impossible, said Lewis, for the very reason that Christ himself had pronounced in the gospel, he that is not for me is against me. He that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. Every plant which my Father in heaven hath not planted shall be rooted up. Here the NRA exposed the fiction of the religiously neutral state, whose very neutrality necessarily involves an official rejection of the claims of Christianity on both men and nations, and thus an anti-theology of the state. So it's very clear here what Lewis was saying, and very clear that Christ himself said it 2,000 years prior to that. So we're going to have to take a break and stop here. We'll come back and talk about this theme about being religious or irreligious when we get back. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You most likely are familiar with Fatima and Lourdes, but did you know that the Blessed Virgin also appeared in the United States in 1859? That apparition took place near Champion, a small town in the Door Peninsula of Wisconsin. Today, Champion is home to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. Join Catholic Spirit Radio the weekend of August 14th and 15th on its pilgrimage to this shrine. Our travels will also take us to the Basilica and National Shrine of Mary, Help of Christians, at Holy Hill, also in Wisconsin. This two-day bus trip departs from Wapella, Bloomington, and El Paso. The cost for the trip is $300 per person, but if you make your reservations by June 30th, the early bird special is only $275. Make plans to join this exciting pilgrimage by visiting CatholicSpiritRadio.com or calling Kathy at 309-828-6554 or Carolyn at 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about the fact of our godless constitution. We're talking about the fact that there was a lot of warning from the very, very beginnings of our nation about leaving God out of the Constitution. And if there is a danger toward having sort of a theocracy by putting God into a constitution, there's far, far more danger in taking God out of a constitution and making it possible for a small minority to take states in a direction that is contrary to the Christian principle, and it's a direction that we seem to be going in faster and faster. We're going in that direction. I shouldn't say we seem to be going in it. We are, but we certainly seem to be going faster and faster along that line, and along that line has led to disasters for modern states in the past, and we can't consider that somehow or another we will be an exception to that rule, that we will somehow, by some kind of magic, be protected from it. It says our own nation, like France, for example, has chosen the social compact theory of government, which seemed to alienate religion and to stand alone in perfect human sufficiency. While the framers had supposed they could contain the worst excesses of social compact theory with conservative checks, this particular person observed that the great question is, are these checks sufficient? Is there not the same capacity for mischief in our modified system as in its simplest forms? And again, this conservative so-called checks and balances. But conservative what? What are we to be conserving. And it seems as if, again, I've talked before about the shadow of conservatism that often follows liberalism, and we see it here, that the so-called conservative checks are a shadow that seems to follow the actual liberal interpretation of our Constitution. And when I mean liberal, I'm talking about the idea of being secular and the idea of having simply earthly principles that somehow or another can guide and keep a nation from safe from going down totalitarian paths. And it goes on here. It says, taking aim at the Constitution's proclamation that we the people were the origin of the Republic's sovereign power, another speaker, Dr. Sloan, a professor of history at Princeton, as well as a Protestant minister, observed that a sovereignty based on popular will provided no ultimate basis for legal authority. He goes on, he says, if the theory thus claimed to be embodied in the present preamble of the Constitution in the words, we the people of the United States of America do ordain this Constitution, is true, then society has no right. Indeed, society is actually ultimately without the right to protect itself against ignorance, intemperance, or any other evil which threatens its destruction. Because we the people can choose to go down any path if there is no principle by which the we the people is governed above they themselves. It's pretty logical that that's the case. And of like mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
people need guidelines. That's why the Ten Commandments were given, how to live.
Exactly, and those guidelines have to be beyond and above. They have to be transcendent. Yes. They have to be above the material. They have to be spiritual, on a higher plane than just the material. Or you're reduced, again, to simply whatever people determined that they think on their own opinion might be some path to utopia. But I want to get in important here for Catholics, of like mind with the NRA was none other than Pope Leo XIII, writing 7 years after the NRA's 1874 convention. I mean, the NRA has been going on here. The National Recovery Association has been going on here since the very, very early times, near the beginning of the Constitution, and still trying to put a check and a break on the direction our country is taking. And Leo XIII, one of our great popes, was agreeing with them on this issue. And he was writing here 7 years after the NRA's 1874 convention, in order to affirm the constant teaching of the very church that, ironically, most of the NRA convention would probably reject and not listen to. And here is what Pope Leo XIII said. He said, very many men of more recent times, walking in the footsteps of those who in a former age assumed to themselves the name of philosophers, say that all power comes from the people. And isn't exactly that what our Constitution is saying? We, the people, that all power is coming from the people? And Leo was disagreeing with that. He said, but from this, Catholics dissent. Catholics affirm that the right to rule is from God and from a natural and necessary principle. In other words, all authority doesn't come from the people. Authority comes from God. Like the NRA, Leo, too, made short work of the nonsensical social compact according to which the subjects are the rulers and the rulers are the subjects. In other words, our Constitution says, you know, that it sort of like goes in a circle. It's enacted by we the people, and we the people are the ones who interpret it, and they interpret it according to secular material principles. And in other words, they leave out the ground of ultimate authority, and the only authority then is actually comes to sheer force, as our Civil War itself, you know, had demonstrated. When there was a issue that couldn't be resolved materially and secularly, we went to a huge war over it instead of following a law of God. So we can see the danger right there in the destruction that happened in the United States with the Civil War, because there was no real principle by which to resolve slavery. At any rate, it goes on here. It says that one of the NRA conventions, let me go on a little bit further here. It says, this conflict of law is inevitable and repressible. Our laws will be heathenized or our Constitution Christianized, and America must soon decide which they will have done. And isn't that the case today?
Well, you sure can see it. And it's not been Christianized.
In other words, it says the Constitution will mold things to itself. And a godless Constitution will heathenize the people themselves eventually. And that seems to be the case that is happening. Either our people will be heathenized or our laws will be Christianized. And our laws are not Christianized. This nation was obviously de facto, you know, by fact alone, by implicitly, if not explicitly, a Christian nation. And without a Christian constitution to guide it, the Constitution is so powerful that it will pull all things in the direction that it goes. And if it goes in a so-called neutral direction, as has been pointed out, there really is no such thing as neutrality. It will go in an anti-Christian direction. And a lot of modern states have destroyed themselves because of this. It says, our nation is Christian. The Constitution is unchristian. Can this anomaly continue? And it goes on here, impossible. One day, one by one, your Christian laws and all the Christian features must come to the test of the Constitution of the United States, and they will fall before it. This is a warning that has happened, and it's happening now. So, again and again, the NRA participants warned that unless amended in the manner proposed, the Constitution itself would be the club by which the defenders of the Christian legal tradition in America would be beaten into submission by a liberal minority. And there it is again that I talked about. In other words, even though you have a basically Christian nation, or did, I don't think we're Christian anymore. In fact, one of our recent presidents, President Obama, came out and said we are no longer a Christian nation. And we aren't. We are a post-Christian nation. And how did this happen? It happened by the pull of a godless constitution. In other words, this attempt to be neutral is not neutral. As these people pointed out, they were right, that it is impossible to be neutral, that a constitution is either religious or it is anti-religious. It is either Christian or it is anti-Christian. And it goes on. It says, the appeal of the enemy, that is, the enemy of Christianity, is to the Constitution. The increasingly immoral ruling class quotes the United States Constitution as authority for such rebellion against the Almighty. And it does. Under the influence of the godless Constitution as wielded by anti-Christian forces, Taylor Lewis predicted, it would not be long before our whole political page becomes a pure, unbelieving, irreligious, Christless, godless blank. And that is exactly what has really happened to our Constitution. A Catholic of earlier times, Orestes Brownson, who was at one time first an atheist, and then he became a Protestant, and then he became a Catholic, and Brownson pointed out, he says, unable to point to any earthly spiritual authority higher than human consent, there is none in Protestantism. the National Reform Association was reduced to advocating a Christian moral order determined by an unstable majority will, the same will whose already alarming drift from Christian morals the NRA itself was lamenting. In other words, because the National Reform Association was made up of all different types of Protestants disagreeing on many things, they could not be unified enough to put some kind of a unified statement into the Constitution. And Brownson pointed out that it would take Catholicity for that. You have to have the dogmatic unification of the Catholic Church in order to do something like that. But Catholicism was overturned by the Reformation and also by the Enlightenment. And Brownson wrote back in 1845 a tract titled Catholicity Necessary to Sustain Popular Liberty. Brownson observed that the Constitution, and remember, he's saying this in 1845, is a dead letter. It has been becoming in practice and is now substantially a pure democracy with no effective constitution but the will of the majority. Only religion could save America from the majoritarian tyranny. Here, too, Brownson anticipated the NRA's program, yet he argued the Protestant religion could not save America because Protestantism, like democracy itself, is subject to the control of the people and must command and teach what they say. Now, we need something above and beyond the people, something above and beyond simply a human being's interpretation of the Bible, principles that were handed down from the very beginning. And so without this, without some kind of stable higher principle above and beyond the Constitution itself that all of us can agree on, or a very, very strong institution such as the Catholic Church can agree on, there's no check upon the state. It says here, Brownson says, where the people are Catholic and submissive to the law of God, and many people calling themselves Catholics are no longer submissive to the law of God. They are in violation of the orthodox dogmas of the church, and a lot of that is because of the living in a country governed by a godless constitution itself. At any rate, he says, as declared and applied by the vicar of Christian and supreme pastor of the church, democracy may be a good form of government. In other words, if democracy is guided by a law and a dogma that is higher and above, you know, it transcends the secular materialism itself, then democracy can be a very good system. But combined with infidelity in the people, its inevitable tendency is to lower the standard of morality, to enfeeble the intellect, to abase character, and to retard civilization, as even our short American experience amply proves. In other words, with a godless constitution and nothing else to guide us, we are going in the wrong direction. So,
and as Our Lady of Fatima said, if we didn't do something and turn back to God, repent, and pray, communism would spread its errors to all nations.
Exactly. And communism, Marxism, is a very, very wide concept. It can be interpreted a lot differently, say, than it was interpreted in the Soviet Union. And we have a Marxism and a communism of today, a secularism, a materialism, going in the direction far different from the Marxism, but just as deadly and just as dangerous. So what can we do? Anyhow, we spend a few minutes here saying, what can we do to oppose this? First of all, as Catholics, we can uphold our dogmatic orthodoxy. Be an Orthodox Catholic. Hold up the dogmas of the church. Follow them, believe in them. Believe and follow the natural law. That is, everything has an essence and a nature according to itself and should be treated that way. Men are, there is such a thing as gender. Human beings are divided into two sexes, male and female. This is the way things have been decreed naturally, and follow that human nature. People survive best in a Christian marriage that is, you know, a monogamous marriage, a solid family with a man and a woman and children. This is the best example, and it should be followed, and this can be done. And people who try to deviate from this can be treated compassionately, but nevertheless can be reminded firmly that for a society to be stable and for the best happiness for all, a solid marriage and family is best. The language should express reality. It shouldn't be changed somehow or another to cover things up. It should always express the truth. We are born into authority. There's no such thing as being born completely free. You're born into the authority of your parents and family and culture, and there's no escape from it. This idea that we can somehow run somewhere and there will be no authority is just to exchange one authority for another, and that the Orthodox authority that the Catholic Church teaches and believes in is authority dictated by God, and we should follow it. That the church's dogmas are dogmas handed to us by Jesus Christ himself, who is God, and we should follow these. And so simply disagree with the direction that the country is going in, and don't go along that line. Support people who speak up for Catholicism if you're unable to do it yourself, and let them know that there are others that believe like them. But that's basically some of the things that we can do.
Pray.
We're going to have to stop
here. Rosary a day.
We're going to have to stop here. We've sort of come to the end. There's so much to talk about. But I hope that gives some idea of how a constitution can lead a country down the wrong path and how dangerous it can be. And so we should always keep it in mind and assert our dogmatic Orthodox Catholicism. So let's say our prayer. Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.